nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
What I want to talk to you today about is graduate student portfolios. We'll review a little bit of what we've talked about so far as far pertaining to resumes and interviewing and those topics. And then we're going to move on to some of the basics of a portfolio and how you apply those in an interview and in networking situations. And as you know, I'm Cindy Lynch. I've been here before, and I work over in the graduate school on professional development. And what we're focusing today on is develop your message, tell your story. What does your portfolio say about you? What do you want it to say? What does it need to say when you're interviewing for a position? You can access much of this material through the non-academic campus here, just by using your career account and password. And if you log in, you'll see a number of other sessions like dissertation writing strategies, grant and proposal writing, mentoring, some other things that might be of interest as you develop your portfolio. So this is what we're going to focus on today, a job search strategy. We talked a little bit about that before, how to conduct a self-assessment. What are your skill sets? What I call networking narratives, you might have heard about these as elevator pitches, but I call them narratives because what you do is you take your elevator pitch and you expand it based upon the amount of time you have, or you shorten it, or you adjust it to the audience that you're talking with. We're going to talk about an individual development plan, your career strategic plan, and how to use the most of your references. So oftentimes, I refer to your portfolio very similar to writing a dissertation or your thesis. These are the background elements, so your lit review, your data elements, that you need to look at and think about prior to writing your dissertation. You would never jump in and write your dissertation without having collected your data or have done a lit review. Same with doing your CV or your resume. You need to develop and think about these components prior to sitting down and writing the CV or the resume. It helps make the CV and the resume writing process much more coherent and much easier, and particularly from the reviewer standpoint as you apply for different types of jobs. We talked earlier about the CARS format. When you talk about the duties and responsibilities that you've had, rather than listing the duties, use this CARS format, talking about the challenge or the context in which it was, the skill sets, the actions that you took, as well as the impact you had, the results that you achieved. Because that's what employers are most interested in, is impact. Based upon your context, what impact did you have? The issue with noting or listing your duties, they're not hiring you to be a graduate student any longer. They're hiring you to be a professional, and they want to see the context that you were working in, what was your performance, and what was your impact, because they're going to use that to apply to the type of position and the duties that you have in that particular position. So I gave you a handout here, and you, I gave this to you before too, but I want you to take a few minutes and think about your professional identity. If you were at a conference, or if you were meeting me for the first time, and you were introducing yourself to me, we had, say, a 2 to 3 minute conversation, 5 minute conversation, what are the 3 to 5 things you would want me to remember about you at the conclusion of that interaction? So with a potential employer, say at a conference, what would be the 3 to 5 things? And you don't necessarily have to use discovery and research. I put that down because as graduate students, almost everyone has some type of research or technical skills that they're developing. You can cross that off and put something else. But what are the 3 to 5 things that you would want me to remember about you? And then maybe jot down some experiences that would help back that up if I probe further about those, that skill set. But take a few minutes here and jot those down. Find someone to pair up with and share those experiences with someone else. Identify what those 3 to 5 things are. In addition to research or within research, what were some of the specifics about your research that you identified? How many talked about research? Nobody? Nobody talked about it. Okay. What were some of the other things that you discussed? Some of the other traits, skill sets. Edgar.
Like work experience. And then, you have work experience.
Very good. Work experience. Anyone else?
Leadership skills.
Leadership skills.
Management.
Management, administrative type of experience.
Teaching,
of course. And if you're not going into a faculty position, you might want to take your teaching and talk about it as oral communication skills, because they're probably not going to have you do teaching, particularly in a formal classroom setting, in industry. They might have you do some training, but it's not in the teaching sense, so you might talk about it as oral communication skills. What else? What's the other thing that you do a lot of as graduate students?
Well, not actually as graduate students, but in general, outside interests. That kind of makes you you.
Right. Kind of helps set you apart, shows that you're a real person.
Yeah.
What goes with oral communication skills? What did I hear? Written communication skills? Mentoring? Right. Mentoring is another one you can add. Sometimes instead of talking about teaching, you might talk about mentoring and advising.
Programming and software.
Pardon?
Programming experience you get in our...
Yeah, programming experience given what you guys do. I couldn't put that on my own, but anything else? One of them that we had talked about before was adaptability and the ability to manage change. How would you describe that? You do it a lot as graduate students. I mean, you don't set the research agenda, particularly as newer graduate students. You're responding to what your faculty advisor feels that you need to go, or where your experiment's going. How do you adapt to something in your research if it doesn't go the way you had planned? So those are the types of things to think about when you're doing this type of activity. If you're looking at faculty positions, the three most prominent ones become research, teaching, and service. Those tend to be the three missions of most institutions. So if you talk about service or engagement, either within the institution, within your professional societies, with as Purdue being a state institution, we talk about engagement with the state. Things that we do with K-12, when you bring, if any of you have participated in summer camps, help lead summer camps here, if you've participated in undergraduate research as a mentor for undergraduate researchers, those are all types of things that help within the engagement or mentoring and advising. So think about some of those types of activities as well, and we're going to come back to that. But why this is important is, particularly in an interview, it helps answer this question and begins to set the stage for where you want to go with the interview. Now, the interviewer will have some specific questions, but you can help guide and set the stage then for the actual interview by identifying certain things that you want them to know about you. But we'll come back to this. So then you want to do your self-assessment. What are the types of things that you're interested in doing? What motivates you? What types of things do you want out of your career? What types of things can you contribute to a career? So if you think about that, here are some of the skill sets, analytical skills, research, teaching, those types of skill sets you learn as graduate students. Some of the values, though, the values really help with your job satisfaction. If you're very interested in job security, we tend to think about faculty positions, the promotion and tenure process. Once you have tenure, it's very hard to fire you unless you've done something quite egregious, or they do away with your entire department. However, if you're very interested in salary, a high salary, you tend to not go to higher education. You look at industry because they're more profit-driven and can pay for those skill sets. If you're interested in autonomy, setting your own course, determining what you want to do, you think about faculty positions. They determine their research agenda. They have some degree of what goes on or what types of courses they teach. They determine what's going on in the classroom. They help set the curriculum, etc. However, in industry, your research program is determined for you based upon what the needs of the company are. So again, those are some of the things to think about as you're doing your assessment. And again, here's some interests over here, the types of things you like to do. If you're driven by business and how business is conducted, versus your personality, the types of things you like to do. If you're a very outgoing person, then probably sitting in an office with no interaction with other people is not the best type of job for you. So here's an example of a self-assessment that I did for myself on oral communication skills. And I've used this in a number of different scenarios. So I talk about oral communication, and then I've identified some of the experiences that I had in oral communication. I can say that I'm an experienced oral communicator. I don't use quality statements. I don't say I'm an excellent communicator, because, again, those are value judgments. But I can say I'm an experienced one because of the types of courses that I've taught, that I've presented at technical conferences, and that I've done workshops. And then I can talk, by doing this, I can also talk about any of the teaching that I've done, the types of conference presentations I've done, and the workshops and the different types of materials that I present at these different areas. In addition, because if you're interviewing, particularly as PhDs, those interviews tend to be about 2 days long, particularly for faculty positions. So you want to have some things that can prompt you in that interview process. Again, you're talking about 2 full days. So basically from the time you step off the plane till you get back on the plane, you're talking lunch, dinner, breakfast, the entire gamut of things that you need to be covering. So with that, I've identified some things that will help prompt me in identifying things that I can talk about over dinner, that I can talk about during lunch, that I can talk about as I'm walking from one meeting to the other. Additionally, they serve as visual aids for the interviewers. It's much easier if they have something that they can see. It makes you look prepared and like you know what you're doing in that process. And then I've identified some mentors that can serve as references for me in that particular area. The other thing this has done is I use this to identify areas of weakness that I might need to enhance or cultivate over my career. So we'll come back to that. So you might think about doing this. There's a different software out there that you can use to do this, but this is mind mapping software that you can get free from ITAP if you're interested in using that. So job search strategies. So one of the ways that you can identify the types of things that companies are interested in or as faculty positions is to go out there and identify 6 to 12 job descriptions. We talked about this before. and identifying the types of things that they're interested in seeing in their employees. And in addition to job descriptions, if you go to, say, conferences and they have the exhibit hall there, the exhibition hall, you can go there and talk to the recruiters there and ask what they like to see in their employees. What are their best employees exhibiting? What kind of skill sets do they have? You can also go to the career fair that we'll be having here on March 3rd and talk with the recruiters there about the types of skill sets. Those are the types of skill sets that you want to be talking about as your 3 to 5 things and introducing yourself or having that exchange with a company or any type of interview process. So you can do that by identifying 6 to 12 types of job descriptions. And in that process, you'll be documenting the process, identifying the places where you did find jobs that matched up with the type of skill set that you have or the types of skills that you're interested in doing. The search engines, some of the challenges you encountered in that process. Identify the types of skills required and desired. And then we're going to talk about the types of skills that you have acquired. And that's where you go back to that oral communication slide so that you can match yourself up in that process. Oops. And so this is just an example of something that I've used in the past that you can use to help visualize this process. But you identify the institution and the company, a copy of the job description, because oftentimes they'll run them for a week or two and then take them off, and then you don't have a copy of that to refer back to if you get called in for an interview. So you want to maintain a copy of that, the contact information, where you send it to, as well as who the chair of the committee might be. The information that you gain from there will be different based upon whether you're applying to a company or whether you're applying to a faculty position. Some companies then have you apply to their HR department, and it's sent through there. The other thing you need to pay attention to is some companies will have an application in addition to the CV and or resume that you have to submit. So you need to be aware of that process. So go through and document that and understand the different types of things you need to go through for different types of companies. And then you might document when you've submitted the different types of things and what you submitted to each company, maintaining a copy of that. So if you get called in for an interview, you have the same documents that you're working from that someone else or that they have as well, so you haven't overwritten those documents. And then again, we talked about this before, is the job search announcement, how you go through and read these, identify the types of skill sets, the type of experience that they're looking for, and how you use that then in your resume and in your networking narrative. So in this case, dynamic cross-functional team-based environment. So if you have any team-based stuff that you do, any interdisciplinary type of activities, you'd want to make sure that you list those in your document. Cross-functional oftentimes means that you're working with individuals that are not within your discipline. And what they're looking for here is, are you able to communicate with someone who's on the marketing team? Someone who might not have the technical background that you do. We see this a lot in, say, for example, in the pharmaceutical companies. So you have your people who do the drug discovery, but you also have the people who have to write up the technical descriptions that go to the FDA. And then you have the people who actually do the ads and things that you see on TV, versus the types of ads and things that they submit to doctors to help prescribe that drug for their patients. So there's a number of different people that you would potentially be working with as a person in the pharmaceutical industry. You see that in a number of different industries across product development versus working with the people on the line, et cetera. So they're looking for people who can communicate in a variety of different settings. So again, pay attention to the job description and what they've put on there. Go to the company website as well. This is another type of job ad for PhD research engineers. Talks about patents that highlighted that PhD graduates will be considered. And then they've identified these three areas. So if I was completing a resume for this job application, I would certainly have some headings that address those three different areas to help me, to help my resume come to the top, that activity that we did last week. Again, this is just another snapshot for you to use as a prompt in developing your skill set and identifying the types of things that you have available. So the duties that they're looking for, the type of experience, as well as what evidence you have to back that up. They will ask you in an interview, they will ask you some probing questions about that experience. So what are the things that you have to do that you can talk about to back that up? And on that sheet, the 3 to 5 things, your professional identity, that's where you start listing those experiences. So as they start probing, you can have that information available. You're not looking for specific examples. You've already rehearsed those, and you know what it is that you're going to be talking about. You're trying to answer these two questions in that process. How does the job suit me? That's one that people often forget about, because you need to be happy and productive in that environment as well. So it's how the job suits me, as well as how do I suit the job? How well do the two of them fit? So an individual development plan. So what this is once you've done that assessment and identify different things that you might want to enhance or develop over time, then you come up with an individual development plan. It's a short-term plan, usually 6 months to 1 year for an individual development plan. And you're looking at skill development. What types of experiences can you talk about to enhance that particular thing? So let's use the skill set adaptability, the ability to manage change. How would you talk about that in an interview? What types of experiences do you have? You do an assessment on the types of your assessment of where you are now and where you think you need to be or where you want to be in order to be successful in the type of career that you've chosen. You want to go month to month with specific types of skills that you wanted to develop, resources that you need to do for this. This could be anywhere from reading books or articles to taking a certain class or any type of experience that would be available. And then you need to get your mentor's feedback. Having a mentor for this process is important, and that person can help identify the resources that you need for that, identify types of experiences, as well as serve as a reference then if you're for an interview or for a job application. So that's where that comes in particularly helpful. So this is an example, again, just another prompt for you to use. But in my own personal case, as I was assessing my skill set and looking at where I might advance next, the area that I identified that I didn't have much experience was in the international realm. I wanted more international experience than what I currently had. So I identified that I needed some type of experience abroad. My specific action was to develop a study abroad course for graduate students. It was a short-term study abroad, 10 days. And so I identified that. I conducted my first one last year. We went to Buenos Aires for 10 days. And in the process of doing that, we met with institutions down there, of colleges and universities down there, as well as Kimberly Clark and entrepreneur down there, a popcorn manufacturer. He was developing popcorn and trying to sell that in Buenos Aires. So I conducted that one. And then for this year, what I did, we wrote a grant to for our study abroad. So in the process of conducting that one activity, I developed these outcomes. I enhanced my teaching. I have more grant writing experience that I can put on my CV. I have my international experience that I was looking for, as well as we're conducting research, the scholarship of teaching and the impact of short-term study abroad on graduate students. So I'll have some, hopefully, a research article out of doing that. And then I've identified my mentor here. So if I want to apply for another grant that I might have this person work with me, or if I wanted to go up for, say, a teaching award or looking at another job, I have someone that can serve in that capacity. So your career strategic plan is just basically, say, a five-year plan. This is very important in if you're looking at a faculty position, because faculty have 5 years to go up for tenure. So what they're looking for is, what are you going to do? What's your folio going to say about you when you go up for tenure? So thinking about that 5 years. If you're in industry, they're looking that you can see out into the future, that you're strategic, that you have that, that you're forward thinking. So it's not uncommon to say, what are you going to be doing in 5 years? Very common question. How would you respond to that? What do you want to be doing in 10 years? What do you want to be doing at the time of retirement? So this type of thing, this particular question guides you in the type of experiences you need to gain in order to move ahead. So for example, if you were, say you wanted to become a department head someday, the process for that is to get a faculty position. Then you need to get tenure. So that first 5 years, what are the types of things you need in order to get tenure? Well, what are they? What are the types of things that, that faculty members do? Experience teaching, very good. What are the other things that at a research institution like Purdue, what are the other things that a faculty member has to have? Research and publication, the publish or perish. The money you bring in, the grant writing types of things that, grant writing, the money that they bring in. Service, are they a good service member? That becomes important to the faculty types of ranks, because who's voting on your promotion and tenure? The senior faculty member within your department. So you need to be a good colleague, because again, tenure is permanent, so you're stuck with this person for a very long time. So they want to make sure that you're going to be a good person to work with. So that's the five-year plan. If you want to become a department head, so you've got tenure, so that's the first thing. If you want to become a department head, what does a department head need to do that they didn't have to do as a faculty member? What's a primary thing? You talked about it earlier. Management experience. You have to manage people. You have to manage budgets. Leadership. Those types of activities. Strategic thinking. Where's the department going to go? Assigning resources. Those are the types of things that a faculty or a department head needs to do. So as a faculty member then, they need to think about how they're going to get that type of administrative experience if they want to become a department head. Same thing goes on in industry. So you're appointed to this position, or you are selected for this position. So where do you go from being an entry-level position to moving up the ladder? What are the skill sets that the company is looking for that shows you're making an impact? Where do they want that impact to be? So, and how are you going to get that? So basically what your career strategic plan is, your individual development plans put together. So your professional development, we're back to the professional development. So again, think about those 3 to 5 things. If we're talking about adaptability, which is the key thing, What are you going to say in an interview about your adaptability, your ability to lead or to manage change? What would you talk about there? If you don't feel you have enough experience in that, how would you develop a plan to gain that type of experience, either as a graduate student or out in industry? So those are the types of things that you want to think about. Because again, it helps set the tone for how the interview is going to go, or where they can talk about where the interview is going to go, or the types of things you want to communicate to them. So in my situation, where I was talking about my oral communication skills, I can really focus on teaching, talk about the course that I developed, the study abroad course, but I could go into a number of different areas from there based upon that one course. I could start talking about my grant writing experience. I could talk about more in depth my teaching abilities and the types of things we do in the course. I could also talk about the research that we're doing in that area. So I've helped lay the groundwork of where that potentially could go. And it makes it much easier for the interviewer then to identify additional skill sets that they can address in that interview. So let's talk about these networking narratives. So based upon that, these are the different types of venues that you might have and be using these narratives. And the focus of these is to talk about how your skill set matches their needs. A networking event is the exchange of information, not only about the types of things that you can do, but gaining information about the company, about the institution, about the type of employees that they have. So when you go to a networking event, a reception or any of those types of things, whether you're on the job market or not, you want to practice these skill sets. Gain some information about what it is that they're looking for so you can develop that skill set along the way. And then based upon the handout that I gave you about the experiences, the 3 to 5 things, and it talks about those experiences. So depending upon the time frame that you have, you can address more of those experiences as you go along than what you do based upon the time set that you have. So 2 to 3 minutes, you might be able to identify one experience. But if you have 20 to 30 minutes, you're certainly going to be able to talk about more things. So are you ready to discuss those in a interview type of situation? So this identifies some of the venues. It could be a conference. We think about this oftentimes at conferences. Poster sessions is a networking or networking opportunities. Interviewing, of course, and then any type of social situation. Any type of daily experience that you encounter are opportunities to network and identify and understand the type of skill sets that other people are looking for. In addition to gaining information about the types of things people are doing. Then you want to think about your audience members. There's a difference in how you present your research and talk with someone within your discipline than what it is to talk with someone who's highly educated in their field, has a PhD within their field, but does not have the terminology and the background that you do in your field. So how do you communicate with those? Again, it goes back to those cross-disciplinary teams and being able to communicate with one another. Talking with a taxpayer or a middle school student, how do you explain your research to a middle school student? These are the types of things that taxpayers are interested in, federal agencies are interested in, and provide money to make that happen. Outcomes, what you're trying to do is obtain information about positions that are available, skill sets, etc., make connections, and then communicate your value. When you go to a conference, do you think about that conference ahead of time? and about the type of people or specific people that you're interested in meeting. Are there companies there, company representatives there, that you can meet with and talk with and find out about their company? Are there people there that you could potentially collaborate with on your research if you want to become a faculty member? When you go to conferences, they're very expensive. So the more you plan and become strategic about how you utilize those activities, the better prepared you are in your portfolio, the more enhanced it is. Poster sessions are another opportunity for networking. You're communicating your value. You're showing your ability to present your research, as well as present your persona, show that you're engaged and excited about what it is that you do. So this is an example of a networking map that I use. These are the faculty members that served on my committee or serve on my committee. I have people over here, alumni that I work with, and I group them this way because it's easier for me to provide information and exchange information with them. So for instance, the alumni, the course I teach, the Preparing Future Faculty, I was looking for two graduates from Purdue to talk about their experiences at the institution they were at. So these are the people that, I don't know, does anybody know Barra? Yeah. So he's now at Georgia Tech. Denise is at the University of South Carolina. And by mapping these types of things out, I can easily identify people that I can communicate with. And because they're alums of Purdue, in order to keep in contact with them, I just send them different articles about Purdue. Purdue makes it very easy for me to do that because they post a lot of stuff on the front page of Purdue. And I just send them articles every once in a while about what's going on at Purdue. The fact that we just announced our new provost. Did anybody hear about that, who our new provost is? Tim Sands from engineering here. So I do that in that aspect. I also use it to work with graduate students in identifying people that they could contact with for different types of positions that they're looking at. So I was working with a student the other day who's interested in getting a job at Google. I happen to know a person who had got a job there last year, so I put them in contact with one another. So anyway, it makes it very easy. Faculty members or people within my professional societies, as I read different articles, I send them to them or send them a quick email about that. Again, it makes it very easy to maintain contact with them. And I'm not emailing them every day or every month. It might be once or twice a year, but it's enough to make contact with them if I need anything from them or can share anything. So if I happen to go to Georgia Tech, I'm going to email Barra and say, hey, I'm in the area. So references. I also use that sheet to identify my references, people that I can work with, people that can provide references for me, or that I can help other people connect with. As you're developing your list of references, I encourage you to put it on a separate sheet of paper. Usually 3 to 5 references give the contact information, along with bullet points that they could best address things about you in an interview process or during the process of getting hired. The interviewer can address those or not, but it gives them a place to start. So if one particular person on your reference list can really address your teaching far better than your faculty advisor, I would note that on there so they would know who to go to for that type of information. It's also very helpful then, because you need to do the same type of thing when you're interviewing, identifying the different people that you're going to be speaking with so you can target your statements to that particular group. So again, I go back to this type of format to identify those people. Also, the other person that I had on there, if I wanted to talk about international experience, I would address Professor Schmidt on that. So then overall, you have those types of things, and we go back to the 3 to 5 things. So what are the 3 to 5 things that you would want me to know about you initially? And I've been focusing on 3 to 5 because that's what I can remember and say a 2 to 5 minute time frame. But in a 40-minute scenario, you might have 10 or 15 of these things that you want to talk about. And they could change based upon the process that you're in or the interview situation that you're in. For example, if you're a faculty member and it's a 2-day interview, some of the different groups that you're going to be meeting with will be the people within your specific area of research, but you're probably going to be meeting with the undergraduate curriculum team or the people that are in charge of undergraduate teaching. You'll be meeting with the department head. You'll probably have a meeting with a business office person, meeting with the students. It's not uncommon. So each of those groups will have a different message that you want to convey. You don't want to be talking about your research to the undergraduate curriculum committee. What are they going to be interested in? There you're going to be talking about your teaching style, addressing learning styles, your mentoring, your advising. Those are the types of things that you would talk about with the undergraduate curriculum team. If you're talking with the department head, that's an entirely different conversation. If you want to talk with a business office or an HR person, they're going to be the ones to talk about the benefits, the insurance, that type of information. Are you prepared to have those conversations? Some of the other things, and those are the things that they're going to be asking you about, but the undergraduate, with the undergraduate curriculum committee, you might want to ask, what type of professional development is available to me? What teaching resources are available here in the department, depending upon the type of institution that you're applying to? So think about those components. So basically then, overall, we talk about the portfolio library. We talk about some of the key elements, utilizing the CARS format, the challenge or context, what actions you took, the results achieved, and the skill set that you developed. Keep any supporting documents that you've developed over time, because when you go out on your interview, if you think about the types of things that you're doing during that time, particularly if you're getting your PhD, you've been in school, or at least in your graduate program, anywhere from 3 to 5 years. So you have a 3 to 5 year time frame that you have to remember these experiences. 3 to 5 years of time frames that you have to be talking about and have this information available to you. So if you taught your first semester and have been on research appointments since then, what do you remember about that first year, particularly if you're applying for a faculty position? So basically then what you can do is pull these experiences from the library as needed. If you take the time to document that over time, then you're not so stressed during that final period as you're out interviewing and trying to finish up the dissertation and get the information to the faculty members, et cetera, and begin the transition away from Purdue into your career. So with that, some of the services we offer there, as you pull together your portfolios, we offer individual consultations, 30-minute consultations in the graduate school to go over your documents if you're interested in that. And then I want to go over just briefly some of the things to talk about from an interview. This isn't a complete list, but the types of things that you want to do to prepare for an interview. Preparation is by far the most important aspect of preparing for an interview. You need to research that company. You need to be prepared for that interview. If they have something posted on the homepage and you ask, do you have this type of thing and it's posted on their homepage, they're going to think you don't care very much about that position. So they want you to be prepared for that, not just from the type of research that you do and how you can connect with them in the research, but that you know their company, their mission, and their goals. Review your experiences. Work, internship, volunteer, course projects, the other types of things that might be interested. We talked earlier about the ability to show that you're a real person, that you do things other than just go to school and get your degree, that you're involved in other aspects. This identifies different skill sets that they're interested in. Again, identifying the skills and knowledge you develop, going back to those 3 to 5 things, the types of things you want them to know. What you're trying to do is direct the interview as much as you possibly can. Identify the types of things that when that interview is over, you want them to have remembered about you. Again, researching as much as you can about that potential employer, the missions, what they're interested in, types of community service projects that they do, any of that type of information you need to be prepared for. And this is particularly important. You want to try and build rapport very early. And there's aspects of that that you can do. There's verbal cues and nonverbal cues in the delivering of your narratives and the types of things that you want to communicate. You don't want to be slouching in your chair. You want to sit upright. You want to dress appropriately for the position that you're interested in. You want to show confidence. You want to maintain eye contact with them, have a firm handshake. Those types of things that you're that show that you're engaged in that process, that you're interested in the process. This becomes very important on a phone interview. They do not have that visual feedback to take into account in that process, so that you need to be more cognizant of the tone and quality of your voice, how quickly you're speaking on the phone, how much you're speaking on the phone so you don't drone on and on. Those types of things you need to be cognizant of. So here are some of the types of interviews that you might encounter over time. One-on-one, that tends to be fairly common one where it's just you and one other person. Oftentimes, though, with graduate students, there'll be one-on-one with maybe a technical advisor and then one-on-one with an HR person, or depending upon the company, they might send a number of different people, and you have one-on-ones, but a series of 2 or 3 of these to assess your technical abilities. The other thing they'll have is like 3 interviewers in one room assessing your technical abilities. Panel, so which is more like a panel. Again, the phone interview, a group interview. The group interview can take on a number of different formats where it's a presentation of, say, your research to the audience, and then there's that feedback afterwards. That's very much considered an interview technique, or where there's just 5 or 6 people sitting in a room. The difference between, say, a group interview and the panel is the panel is really basically everyone lined up in front and you're the lone person sitting on the other side. And it's far more intimidating when you see that type of thing going on, because it's kind of like this force against the one of you. The phone interview, often seen used as a screening tool. And the other thing to think about the phone interview, there's also issues. How many of you have a landline anymore in your apartment or where you stay? Does everyone else only have cell phones? Oftentimes we would say, or interviewers for phone interviews ask you to find a landline and call from a landline rather than your cell phone. It didn't used to be an issue for us because we all had landlines, but what we're noticing with students and graduate students today is that they're not putting in landlines anymore. So we've had a number of calls into the graduate school. Where can I get a landline on campus to hold this interview? So that's beginning to become an issue because the quality of the cell phone just isn't very good in some cases. So that's one of the things that we're looking at. The other thing about phone interviews is your preparation for them. What's nice about them is you can have your documents and things sitting in front of you, you know, all your things that you have there, and be prepared for them that way. But which oftentimes you don't have in a regular interview. So that's one bonus of a phone interview. But we're seeing more of those because of the tight economy. And then case interviewing or behavior interviewing. Have any of you participated in any of that type of interviewing? They'll give you cases or scenarios and ask you to respond to those. What was your experience with that? How did you feel about that? Higher was that? So it's a little bit more difficult and harder to prepare for, right?
Yeah.
So these are very different in behavioral interviews. Some of the types of questions they might ask during a behavioral interview is, so what was the last book you read? They're trying to assess the types of things that you would do, or they give you a situation, you have this employee, what are you going to do in this type of case? They're trying to assess your responses to things based upon different scenarios. And I think that's basically what I wanted to cover today. So.